Good morning. Good morning. It's good to be in here where it's warmer and certainly drier, and to gather for worship today. We're launching our Spring Chapel series. The theme is Abundant Life, Joyful Living. And we'll have several people speaking on this theme throughout the early chapels and Spiritual Life Week. We'll introduce today's speaker a bit in a few minutes, but in a week or so, Steve Chris is coming. He works with Franconia Mennonite Conference and also teaches some for Eastern Mennonite Seminary in Lancaster, and among other things. Amanda Garber, who is the pastor of Rise, a ministry right here in Harrisonburg for young adults, and some EMU students are going to Rise. She'll be here for Spiritual Life Week. And then we'll continue the series with our own Jonathan Swartz, a campus pastor, intern, and seminary and CJP student, and our pastoral assistants, and then maybe beyond that as well. Abundant life, joyful living. I invite us to reflect on that and start thinking about and talking about that theme in various ways. Let's open with prayer, a prayer that I selected from this book, but you don't need to pull the book out, just pray with me. Come, child of Bethlehem, make your presence known to us and dwell in our midst as we worship. Come, servant king, teach us the ways of your kingdom and make our hearts your throne. Come, brother of all, show us the meaning of our humanity. Go before us and lead us to God. Bring us to the fullness of your kingdom. Amen. Scripture passage selected by Judy Mullett, our speaker, is from Colossians 3, starting with verse 12. As God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience. Bear with one another, and if anyone has a complaint against another, forgive each other. Just as the Lord has forgiven you, so you also must forgive. Above all, clothe yourselves with love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony. And let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, to which indeed you were called in the one body. And be thankful. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly. Teach and admonish one another in all wisdom. And with gratitude in your hearts, sing psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs to God. Judy Mullett is professor in the psychology department and also teaches with the Master's in Education program. She received her PhD from Kent State University, where her dissertation work focused on context-motivated conflict strategy choices of middle school students with learning disabilities. She was a school psychologist before coming to EMU and has authored and co-authored recent publications on restorative discipline and harmful teacher behaviors. A member of the faculty since 1986, Dr. Mullett specializes in restorative discipline in schools, conducting workshops across the USA. She also gives herself as an occasional speaker here in our chapel, and we're grateful for that. Let's welcome Dr. Mullett to the stage. Judy.
Been here longer than most of you have lived on the face of this earth, and I think I get more and more excited every year about spiritual practices, so today I can hardly wait to share one specifically, one that I've been practicing the last while, and you're going to practice it with me. But I'm going to begin with two stories. The first one is in Ohio. Who's from Ohio here? Okay, oh, thank you. Oh, good. Now I feel at home. And I shared an office as a school psychologist with a speech-language therapist, and she was one of the smartest people I've ever known. She was so knowledgeable. I learned so many things from her. But what her pastime was, what her family, and she had a daughter too, they spent all of their time investing in this land that they had bought out west. And they had dug this underground and built this huge concrete, fortress in some sense, because she was sure, they were sure the world was going to end with a nuclear catastrophe. So she knew exactly what kind of food she needed to, how she would dry it, how she would store it. They had bought all this stuff. They had it in their house and would take it out there occasionally along the way. They even had planned right down to what they would do if somebody knocked on their door and wanted help too, because they could only afford certain people at that time. Well, one day, she pulled out in front of a car, and everything changed. She woke up out of a coma about 2 weeks later, and all of those inhibitors that kept her from saying whatever she was thinking, they were gone, and she could swear like you would not believe. And she told stories, oh goodness gracious, that would make anybody blush. But I know her husband was embarrassed over and over again. Well, her life changed, and she was taken care of by her parents for a while, and then cared for in an agency that cared for her. Now, I tell that story, and I'm going to compare it with another story. Now, my son, not long ago, he's a physicist, and during a really rainy day like today, he went to hear somebody speak, and the speaker just in passing said something like, well, I wonder how many raindrops are out there. So he sat down and he said, I wonder how many molecules are in a raindrop. So in two pages, with all sorts of formulas and all the rest, he came up with this, and he had to explain it to me. And this is how he explained it. Okay, if you started constructing a raindrop at the time of Jesus' birth, okay, and you completed it, one raindrop, you would complete it in December of this year, you would have to construct 17 billion molecules a second. Ever since Jesus was born to today, 17 billion molecules a second. That's really impressive. So the first story is really a story of scarcity thinking. Sort of the opposite of abundance, isn't it? It's that idea that we take with us, and for sure, oh goodness gracious, resources, they are scarce. Where would we be without a sustainable thinking that we have now? Because we are running out of resources. I mean, if we shared some of them, we all could live, but we're gonna run out, we need to take care, so please, please, it's important to think about things in scarcity terms at times. But what happens when we look at that economically, when we begin to think more broadly, is that everything becomes scarce to us. And so we think even the most important things in life, which aren't scarce, they're abundant. Okay, things like that we talked about in Colossians 3, love and kindness and actually patience and even forgiveness, those are really in abundance. They aren't scarce. They're really like that raindrop. If you're down to your last raindrop of hope, 17 million a second just to get that raindrop since the time of Jesus? Well, Colossians talks about us clothing ourselves with the love and the heart of God. Not the scarcity thinking that we do, that we compete for. I'm going to give some examples of that. We compete for to be the most loved. My mom likes me best, right? We compete to be valedictorian. We compete to win. There's only one. Second place doesn't count, right? It's so scarce. Right? We want to be that very best. We hoard our friends. We want a best friend. Right? And we have an in-group and an out-group, and that makes us more special. It's because it's just there isn't as much of that to be in our in-group as there is out of it. We compromise instead of looking at transformative solutions. So ideas and relationships in our minds are really scarce. And that's not at all. It's not at all the way of Jesus. This is a way of abundance. We even hoard ideas. I mean, Laura and I did some writing, and we'd look at our ideas, and then we want to copyright those before you get them out there, you know, sometime, because maybe someone will take those. So we struggle with that concept. Even hope, again, is scarce. We think about back in my high school days when I contemplated suicide about every other day for about 2 years. That hope was scarce. You contemplate, there is not enough of it there. But now we're finding out, and I love that because nature is teaching us that. Science is teaching us that. Psychology, neuroscience is teaching us of the abundance of that. That Framingham Heart Study is really one of my favorite, and it's kind of an older one now in the sense of the last 5 years probably. But they had been studying them way back when, just looking at heart health, and then they began to study these communities and these families, and they recognize this, what they call 3 degrees of happiness, right? So if someone moves next door to me and they're really happy, I get happier because they're happy. That's fine. Happiness is contagious. But if they have a friend who I don't even know who suddenly gets happier, then they become happier and then I become happier, even if I don't know that friend. It's 2 degrees. Now, if that friend has a friend who's pretty happy, then they're happier. And then there, my friend is happier, and then I'm happier. 3 degrees. It's contagious. Right? It's like that water droplet. Josh Kanagi and I have spent time over the last 3 years looking at an alternative theory for altruism, and we call it shared joy. Shared joy is that when you share it, it's exponential. Like I tell my graduate students, many teachers, when I teach them during the summer and in the fall, and there's usually somebody that's pregnant, and I say, tell me when you have your child, email me, it'll make my day. And if it makes my day, then I'm a better teacher, and it makes your day, and they're nicer to their neighbors, and so on. We know that now, it's contagious, exponentially. Perhaps the greatest example of that is post-traumatic growth. Okay, you've all heard of post-traumatic stress disorder, right? And the awful things that happen when you go through, you can go through a war, you've had a hurricane take everything from you, or you have been abused terribly or lost all your limbs, all of the most awful things that you can imagine. And some people get post-traumatic stress disorder. And some people don't. Some people are resilient to start out with, and then they work their way through it, and they continue living a meaningful life. But some people who aren't necessarily resilient, somehow in that situation, instead of letting it devastating and ruining their lives, which can happen, somehow, and we don't know why that exactly works, but somehow they actually grow exponentially. So Tedeschi is one of those, and he has this sort of scale. And what are the indicators of post-traumatic growth? And they found out, and they're studying this right now, even among troops, if you tell people this is possible, then it can become possible for some of those if you go through something really traumatic. There's seven of those, but I've collapsed a few of those here. And one of those, now look at this in terms of abundant thinking, right? Remember, the things that are spoken about in Colossians, those are abundant. They're abundant. I don't love one child more than I love my other two, right? First one, new opportunities. You will see new opportunities that you never saw before. That's post-traumatic growth. You see opportunities. Oh my goodness, I never saw that before. I might do that. And not only that, you end up with a direction. You're more likely in those situations to find a new direction that brings meaning for you. You know, that's an example of somebody who lost their only child through violence and then works towards talking with children and how to prevent that, how to grow differently. They found a mission, right? So they can get a mission, they'll see more opportunities, new opportunities. They have deepening friendships. They're just closer with certain people. And I remember sharing this with someone who was going through a really, really tough time in her life. And I said, tell me, do you see a new opportunity or a different opportunity than you've had before? What would those be? And she couldn't think of that. But when I said, talk to me about your friends. Are you closer to any of them now because of this? Yeah. Wow, to get closer to your friends, how rich and deep is that? We put more effort into our relationships. We value life in the moment more. That's another one. You discover strengths that you didn't know you have. If you know it's possible in those situations. And then this one comes up over and over again. Better understanding of spiritual matters. Somehow your eyes are opened that there's another dimension. There's another aspect of what this life is all about. So abundance lies in how we clothe ourselves. Now think about that. When you go out, you think about today, you wore something because it's raining or whatever. We think about what you do before. So a spiritual practice that I'm going to share about that, clothing ourselves in love. This is how I do this from time to time. And I did it right before I came in here because I'm really nervous. And thank God I ran into Sam first. He was out there and I said, okay, things are going to be all right. I know him. Right? He's going to be there. That's all that I needed. It's just to know. And then I practiced this. It's called How to Open Your Heart. And it's from Dr. Luskin on the Stanford Peace Forgiveness Project. He uses it to help people who have gone through awful things learn to forgive. And he calls it an open heart practice. So what I want you to do, we're going to practice this because what does it say? Let the peace of God rule in our hearts. How do you let that happen? Right? I mean, that sounds so simple, right? Love is the answer, blah, 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 live abundantly, blah, 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 blah. But how do you do that? Well, I'm going to just show you one way that's accessible for you in any moment at any time. And I have lived that this last while. Okay, so I want you to stand. And you're going to close your eyes for this. Now, I want you to think of someone who loves you. Someone who loves you very deeply, and you love them. And it may have been in the past, and you don't see that person anymore, but I want you to think of that person. Now, I want you to imagine that friend in your presence right now beside you. And that person is smiling at you. They might pat you on the back. They might give you a hug. But they're just present and accepting of you. Now, imagine that friend telling someone else what a worthy, neat, awesome person you are. Telling someone else about you, passing it on. Now imagine that friend listening carefully and compassionately to your troubles. What's bothering you right now? The toughest thing that's going on in your life right now, whether it's a class or trouble at home or a relationship or just can't get out of bed in the morning. Imagine them listening carefully and compassionately. Now imagine them sharing good news with you and you sharing good news with them. Now imagine saying thank you to that friend from the bottom of your heart. Now I want you to attend to how your heart feels right now. Now this is actually embodied cognition, that all of our thoughts, all of our memories are housed within our bodies. They're not in some abstract place somewhere, they're housed somewhere. And you can remember them at any point in time. If you've known love, then you can feel love and you can give love. Open hearts, open hearts. Closed hearts, close hearts. If I ask you to, and I'm not going to because I want you to still remember, I want you to keep your eyes closed, I want you to still remember that love and feel what it feels like, because that's the feeling, and you can get that anytime you think of that person. But a closed heart is what you do when you enter into a tough situation with someone you don't like, and they know it, and they close their hearts. Closed hearts, closed hearts. If you enter into tough situations and you just think about the love, and you just imagine what's already happened, and you can do that, you just remember, then that fear is cast out. Love casts out fear. You will enter into one. I did that not that long ago with somebody I have a problem with, that we haven't been getting along very well. And I came with an open heart. And you listen differently. You are being different. We remember the love of God through the love of others. That's how we know it. We can open our hearts to abundance whenever we choose. Whenever we come before his presence with thanksgiving, and that's the part. Remember to say that thanksgiving for the love that's been given to us. It's available in any moment and as long as we choose to remember. Abundance is a spiritual practice. Remembering means just that. Coming back to something that you are part of, a member of. You're a member of the love of God. You will remember. As we remember with Christ and the love of Christ. After all, God is love. Amen. Go with an open heart. Thank you. You're dismissed.